500,000 impressions, 400 comments, 100 reshares. Our engagement's really high. Like, I don't know another brand that does it the way that we do. And we do things very differently.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Ali Ryan, the founder of the Goss Media Empire. We hear how being told this is just a hobby from an investor led to a 10-year journey to build one of the biggest media empires in Ireland, getting over 1 million reads a month. Here's my chat with Ali. Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish businesses who grew from one idea to become world-class companies, able to compete with the best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to become more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. Visit localenterprise.ie or click the link in the bio below. Okay, you know me. You know I'm massively into my health, fitness, and training. But there's one thing I haven't spoken about before, and that is a product I take every single day. It's a product called Resilience, and it's made by an Irish company called Ethos. What's kind of funny is that every single entrepreneur I meet, that is the one characteristic they have, incredible resilience. So I like that little play on words. It's a multifunctional supplement that supports cognitive function, immunity, which is super important this time of year, energy levels, and it keeps stress at bay. I also love it because it's easy. If you're bringing anything new habit into your life, it has to be easy, and taking Resilience is so simple. I simply mix it in a glass of water every single morning, and I always throw a couple of extra in my gym bag to keep them with me. It's a really tasty blood orange flavor as well. It ticks all the boxes. It has B vitamins, amino acids, vitamin C, and adaptogens like reishi mushroom and ashwagandha. So, if you want to try it, I think you should. Go to weareethos.com. And because I like it so much, the guys have given me a discount code. So if you go to weareethos.com, enter Gary Fox at the checkout, you'll get 20% off, which makes taking Resilience about €1 a day, which is an unbelievable price for building some inner resilience. Check out weareethos.com. If you've been listening for a while, you'll know Iconic Offices have been my partner and home in the pod for a long time now. Working and recording in their spaces has helped support the ambitious goals of the pod and, to be honest, really helped it grow. So I partner with them to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, the opportunity to work from Iconic Offices spaces and experience it for yourself. No fees, no catches. Simply visit the Iconic Offices link in the show notes below and enter the code GARY24 and claim your free co-working day pass, or bring the whole team with you and book a day office. Ali, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Pleasure to have you.
I'm excited.
I think people will know you and your brand name. So tell us what the brand name is.
Goss.ie/Goss Media/the Gossies. I feel like they're the three names that would stand out.
It's funny. Obviously, I mightn't be your exact demographic, but every time the Gossies are on, all I see is like, pop, 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 pop.
I know.
For 48 hours.
It's insane. Amazing. It takes over. So it's in 3 weeks, by the way. So get ready for round nine. It's our ninth Gossies, which is crazy. But yeah, people almost think the Gossies are their own brand now. It's been said to me because it's so standout. Even in the UK, like UK companies, talent agents, they've like the Gossies. They think my company is called Gossies. They
don't even in the event business.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. They don't. And even they think then when they learn about the site, they think the site is called Gossies. It's really funny. But yeah, the Gossies probably would be one of our biggest standout in terms of the public knowing who we are or what we do, because we get so many amazing celebrities that attend. And like you said, it trends online for at least 2 days. Yeah, it's mental.
Isn't that funny though, how like so many media brands are now trying to morph into events brands as well.
Yeah, it's interesting for me to see people try to do it, because I've been doing it for 9 years.
Yeah.
And I think that's all down to advertising and funding in terms of why companies are starting doing events. It's why I started the Gossies. I wanted to do them anyway, but it was 2016. So we were like a year and a half in business, 2 years in business, I think. And I was literally struggling to make the payroll. And I was like, what are we going to do? I need like a chunk of cash to come in. And I'd always had this idea of doing an awards. And I was like, oh, maybe I could sell sponsorship for categories. And then I did. And I literally had that idea 3 weeks before we did the first Gossies. And it happened that quickly. And so many people were like, this isn't a good idea. Take time. You know, you've never organized an event before. It's not going to work. People aren't going to go. And we literally had everybody there.
Really?
And UTV Ireland actually screened it and everything on UTV. So
really?
Yeah, it was
How
amazing.
Far in advance? You said 3 weeks?
3 weeks, yeah. Whoa. And I had like leading viewers and stuff being like, don't do it, it's not going to work. My own team at the time were like, it's not a good idea, it's not going to work. Like it was a bit, and that is probably the biggest story about me. If you ever talk to anyone about me, it's that people tell me I can't or it won't. And I'm like, it will. And I sound crazy. And then it works and it absolutely goes better than expected. So that's what happened with that first year. And I think seeing other media brands, no one has ever tried to, well, maybe they've tried to, but definitely no one's competed with the Gossies as of yet in terms of what that event actually is. There's obviously the VIP Style Awards that's been around before us. Mm. So that's, I wouldn't even compare to that. But since we've launched the Gossies, there's definitely been brands who maybe have tried to do that. And the thing is, like, I get emails all the time from like literally people in Google and stuff being like, who is your events team? And I'm like, me. I don't hire an events team. Like, we do it ourselves.
Events are bloody hard.
They are hard. But when you've done them like this, like if you told me tomorrow I needed to organize your wedding for 50 people in this small little venue in Spain and everybody only spoke Spanish, I would sort it out. Like, it's just once you've done them the way I have done them, which is like, you have no money, you're making the money yourself, you have no events team, you have to do it yourself, to the point where, like, I think in the first and second year we were decorating the tables ourselves, like the team. Once you've done it that way, you don't ever want someone else to do it. And right. It seems like the biggest waste of money to pay an events team, what, I don't know, 25 grand to do something I can do in my sleep. Like, that's how strong I am about the Gossies. Like, there's nothing I can do better than the events. Like they're only 3 weeks out now and there's a few things we still haven't signed off on yet, and still the girls are like, oh my God, and I'm like, it's fine. It'll be fine.
Did you need it to work? Is that why you were so adamant about doing it?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, definitely monetary, I needed that side to work. The actual event, I just wanted it to. And I knew that there was a space for it. I had been going to other awards shows for years, like in Ireland, the UK, LA. Like, I've been really lucky to go to like Oscars week every year for the last 14 years. So I'd seen I'd seen a lot of the events. And I just felt here, there was nothing that was taken seriously, but also really good crack. It was either it's really good crack and it's not that serious, or it's like, you know, the IFTAs, it's like extremely serious and, you know, it's kind of political almost, getting nominated and you're moving all stuff. So I was like, and also when I was growing up, there was like the Meteor Awards. Do you remember them?
I do, yeah.
Like all these music awards, there was the TV Now Awards, there was like presenters, all of that was lost. And I was like, we should create something where TV presenters and musicians and models can all be nominated. And then I went, oh, do you know who else should be nominated? Influencers. So we were the first people to ever do that.
So you spotted that already.
100%. Yeah. We were the first people to even ever write about that. Like, some of the biggest influencers now that have been around, so Goss is 10 years this year. So if you look at anyone who's been around for the 10 years, so many of them would still say to me now, like, if it wasn't for Goss, you know, like in terms of how they became established, like they were all amazing creating content. But I came from a newspaper background, and influencers, social media stars, Snapchat stars is what they were called at the time. They were not legitimized. Nobody wanted to talk to them. No one cared about them. And we kind of made this specific effort to actually create them into celebrities and create this new bubble of celebrities in Ireland. And we started that. So we started nominating them, and then other awards started nominating them. So like, it's kind of kicked off a kind of new phase, I think, in the Irish celebrity scene. And now you'll see influencers are on the cover of magazines and stuff like that. Like, when I started Goss in 2014, that never would have happened in a million years. Like, I remember one influencer we interviewed, he rang me like a couple of days after saying like the Irish Times just done a spread on him. And I was like, oh my God, amazing. That's so good. And he was like, no, like, it's because of our interview. They read it on Goss. So I think that's the thing people maybe don't understand, is that like, I came from a newspaper background. So when I started Goss, it caused a lot of trouble in the industry, in that newspaper editors, newspaper owners were not happy about it.
Why? I had
two lawsuits that were threatened to me, which I'm not going to say from who, but they weren't happy because first of all, I was a 24-year-old girl going, I'm going to start my own website. So I'd say everyone was like, oh, she can F off. But then very quickly, it became popular. Like, I'd say in the first 24 hours, like, it really took off immediately because I think of the work I'd already done in the industry, and I'd built a trust right. with a lot of celebrities and stuff like that. Like, I remember Nicky Byrne had a radio show on 2FM, and the week we launched, he called it out on 2FM. Like, I never even asked him to do that. Okay. And then I think TV3 had a press day and they invited me, and I was like, oh, okay, it's okay that I've left newspapers. They actually care about Goss. So that happened very quickly. So a lot of other papers were not happy. To this day, I know of editors that tell their staff like not to have Goss on the screens in the newsroom and stuff. Yet what? They're told.
Why though? I don't understand this.
I don't know.
Two completely different areas.
It's not though.
You don't think so?
No. We break stories faster than them. That's the problem.
Is that the issue?
Yeah. And the thing is, this is what I was saying to you just before. People look at Goss and they think it might be fluffy or bloggy. It's a newsroom. That is how I run Goss. Goss is a news organization. So we're getting exclusives. We're going to the Oscars. We're going to New York Fashion Week. We're doing intimate interviews. We're getting like flown to the Downton Abbey premiere by like a movie company because they want us to be there. So like we are the exact same. But it's annoying to them that I'm, at the time I was 24, I was getting all these exclusives. I was getting celebrities to tell me things that they weren't saying in other interviews and stuff like that.
Why was that? Did they feel more comfortable because of your relationship or because it was digital first? What was it?
No, definitely the relationship, yeah. Yeah, 100%. The digital thing was really new. Like it wasn't a thing at the time. Like there was no website in Ireland that had entertainment just on it. So the entertainment.ie was around at the time, but that was more so like movie reviews. Yeah. And the reason I started Goss was because I was working in a Sunday newspaper at the time. And I'd have an amazing story on a Tuesday and I have to wait all week for it to be published, which was good in a way because some of the stories needed to be like bigger and longer form and all that sort of thing. But it was frustrating me that there was nothing. And you have to imagine back to 2014, there was nowhere where you'd find out Ryan Tubridy has just left RTÉ. You would have to read it in the newspaper the next day. And I started out in the Herald, which was like very quick, fast. And that's probably where I got my kind of obsession with being really quickly because there was two editions a day of the Herald when I was there. So I'd be in at 6 a.m. publishing and then again at lunchtime publishing again. So there was two editions. So I was always really quick on that. But actually way back to when I was 19, I worked in Spin Southwest in Limerick and I started a blog then called Miss Red. Don't know why I called it that. But I had like interviews with Laura Whitmore, Vogue Williams. And I remember when Vogue and Brian McFadden got together, the Mail Online used my interview from my little blog when I was like 19, 20. And I was like, oh my God, this is so weird. So it's been in me even before I started in newspapers, this like need and want for things to be instant. And obviously that's a part of the millennial generation, even more so with Gen Z. But it was frustrating me. And like when you talk to like really successful top entrepreneurs, and I'm not saying I am that, but when you listen to stories, you always hear it begin with there was a problem to solve, something that was missing. And that's what it was for me. Nowhere was publishing things fast. And even when like the Irish Independent website or other sites were starting to publish more online, it wasn't showbiz. Like showbiz is rarely taken that seriously by publishers in general. Which is annoying because I had like an editor say to me once, the two things that sells a newspaper is politics and showbiz. And I genuinely believe that. And he also said the two hardest jobs in this industry is politics and showbiz. And they're very similar. You have to gain people's trust in order for them to tell you they've broken up with such and such or whatever. You know, like it might seem like a flimsy little story, but the work that goes into getting it's just
years,
the same.
Years yeah, of it's ages. It's so, not the news on the day. It's the years you've spent building up.
And like
trust.
I've had like, I remember even like, UL, like we still take in, like sometimes we take in people for their co-op because I went to UL. And I remember one year a lecturer was chatting to me and he was like, oh, we must get you to guest lecture. This is at the very beginning now. And he was like, but I'm not sure what we'd do it on because, you know, showbiz news, as if like it wasn't a topic. And I was like, showbiz news is a sort of journalism. And like, anyway, I never guest lectured there. I have guest lectured in DIT and stuff like that. But that's the kind of rhetoric at the time when I launched Goss and probably is still around, that showbiz isn't serious, that it's not that hard, et cetera, et cetera. It's actually one of the most difficult things. And in terms of defamation, it's one of the largest areas people sue. And I think...
What were the lawsuits? Go back to that, to the two
I'm
lawsuits.
Not going to tell you.
No, but what was the genesis?
I can't tell you anything. I'm just going to tell you that two different newspapers tried to sue me when I said Goss. That's all I can say. It's ridiculous, like absolutely ridiculous.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, there's no proper reason for it. It was just to try and scare me. But it was just mental because it was 2 weeks in when that happened.
Wow.
And I just didn't realize I was that much of a threat. Like I kind of thought it was going to take ages for it to kind of build and da da da. I was so early in. I think they just wanted me to not do Goss.
To scare you away from just even trying.
But I'm not like that at all. Like I think, and I had a legal team before I even started Goss. So there's a lot I say with me with underestimating me and how I work and how I think and my intelligence levels. It happens all the time in all areas of my life where people will like get to know me, they'll meet me and they'll be like, this sounds so bad, but I actually just did not think you were this intelligent, or I really didn't think you had your shit together. It's really annoying, like for me, and I don't know, is it the blonde hair, the boobs? I don't know what it is, but it happens. It only happened to me a couple of weeks ago. Someone said it to me again, and I was just like,
in what sense did they say it to you?
Just that, like, so like I recently graduated from Griffith College. I just completed a degree in law on top of all the other things I'm doing, and I got awarded the best in the whole college for like my, what was it called? The highest achievement award. So I got the highest marks. And just somebody that I know said to me, I honestly just didn't know if you were actually like that intelligent. Like I was like, fair play that you're doing it or whatever.
Genuinely.
This isn't a close friend now, but someone
I was going to say, hold on. How well did they know
this
you?
This is on that's... a night out. Someone said it. But I thought it was interesting, and people are normally like, oh, that's so nice that you're like changing people's like thought process behind you. But like, I find it so depressing. I'm like, why am I still having to prove myself? And I do feel like that quite a lot. And probably going back to college, a part of that was maybe to show people that I am more, which is bizarre. If there was a man sitting here, I doubt you'd have to have a conversation where a man would have to feel like, oh, I don't just own a publishing company. I'm also now qualified. Whereas I feel like I have to have something else. I did at the time that I needed something else. I was obviously starting to work with the Department of Justice and stuff like that. And I was doing a lot of TV work. This all happened in COVID when I went back to college. And I was talking about more current affairs issues. And I was like, I would like if people took me more seriously when I'm on TV, that it's not just Ali, founder of Goss.ie. Mm. It's like, I also have this law degree. Now I actually work in a law firm as well. I've worked with the Department of Justice. I'm an ambassador for them. I'm like working on new legislation. I kind of wanted people to know all those things. Obviously, in hindsight, it shouldn't matter what people think, but that's kind of something I struggled with the last few years, is that no matter how big Goss gets or how successful it is or how many Oscars, red carpets or interviews or exclusives, there's still this slight tone sometimes with her.
Where is that tone coming from, Ali?
I don't know. I do think being a woman is a huge part of it. I mean, do you know another female media company in the country owned by a woman?
Mm.
There isn't one. I'm the only one. There might be companies that are led by women, but none of them are actually owned by women. So that's the first hurdle. I'm the only one. And in saying that, obviously when I started, the big competitors for me would have been at the time like Love in Dublin, Joe.ie. Both those founders are no longer with the company. So 10 years on, I'm still with mine.
Yeah.
You think that'd be pretty cool, like when you compare it. But
good story. Yeah.
It is a good story, but I don't think anyone ever thinks that, thinks about it either. So, I mean, and I've seen those guys in particular on the cover of magazines, like doing loads of stuff. I've never done any of those things. And I'm not saying I need to do those things, but I started to realize over a couple of years that like I was actually doing the same things and it wasn't being received in the same way. There was still a kind of question over the legitimacy of me and the company all the time. Now, it's definitely not like that now. Like it's more so, I think we've finally broken ground on it and it took a really, really long time to get there. But there's definitely still a little bit of it. The fact that that conversation only happened a couple of weeks ago, that someone
was
like...
I don't know why I keep getting surprised, because I talk to so many female founders and consistently they say this, and consistently they'll say, it only happened last week, or they only someone said to me, happened this morning.
Yeah.
They were sitting in the chair there and they said, actually, it happened this morning.
And that was a girl who said it to me, but I've had a lot of guys over the years really talk down to me. Like, I mean... In 2017, 2018, we got like four offers to be bought, right? So one of them was for over €1 million and it was a really big deal. The others were around that sort of thing. But I like cut the conversations really quickly to the other one. There was only one we nearly did. But the first three, it was all men who literally sat me down and said, oh, like we can give you like a salary. Because back then I was like, what's a salary? Like when you start a business, you literally have no money, like no money. They're like, we can get you a salary and give you an office. And I was like, no. So that kept...
Sounds like hell.
Yeah.
Well, how long were you in the business at that stage?
2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were massive publishing houses, the competitors. The last one wasn't. It was a US company who ended up buying Tatler magazine, Nora Casey's company.
Yeah.
You might remember that deal. Yeah, yeah. We were part of that whole situation as well, which I'm really glad I didn't do that deal now.
Were you ever tempted?
I was very close to that one.
That's a big offer.
I was very close to that one. But to be honest, with all the deals, it came down to the attitude of the people that I just wasn't willing. I just didn't feel like, again, I was being spoken to in the same way or being treated in the same way as I should have been. And I was like, no. And I remember one of the conversations with one of the companies, they were very much like, we'll give you, I think it was like, we'll give you 100K or something like that. Now, like, some people do sell their businesses for like that if they're early in and they're struggling. And the first 3 years are the worst 3 years. So this was within that time where like I had been sleeping on the office floor sometimes. I couldn't afford a taxi home or a Lewis home. Like I was so broke. So they were saying all this to me. And I was like, I know that this company is worth more. And at the time it wasn't. But I knew it was. And I remember them saying something to me about having an office or something. And I said, I will literally sleep in my car if it means that's how I'll get Goss to be successful. And they were like, right. So like, I think that was one of the last conversations I had with someone that wanted to buy it. And I was like, no. I was like, I need to build this on my own and keep going. And we had such a tough year when that final deal nearly went in. Like, I mean, honestly, that most sane people would have walked away from Goth that year. Like, and I still walked away from that deal in the end and was like, no, it's not right. So that was really stressful.
What was your vision for Goth when you started? What did you want to do? Like, I know you said you're trying to solve a problem, but what was your, did you have an outcome or were you just like, I just have to do this?
It's so funny because I don't think I ever focused on it being a long-term thing, to be honest. Like, I remember making the decision to leave my job. I had just won Showbiz Journalist of the Year. I was like the youngest person to ever be nominated, let alone win. So when that all happened, I was 22 and I was like, oh my God, that was my long-time goal, was to win that award.
Really?
So it happened so soon and I was up against so many of my peers, people that were also in my organization that were years my senior and stuff. So I never thought I was going to win. So when I did win, I was like, oh God, what's my next focus? So at that point, I was 22, it was 2012, 2013. And if it had been 10 years prior to that, and if someone had said to me, where do you want to be in 10 years? I would have been like, I want to be the editor. But I had already at that point started to think that magazines and newspapers were not the future. It was going to be all online. Keep in mind, there was no online sites really in Ireland at the time. The Mail Online was like the biggest thing, and that was in the UK. So when I won that award, the London Mail brought me over for like a secondment for a month, and I managed their showbiz for like a month. And there was definitely job opportunity there. Then I flew to LA and they were starting the Mail Online in America, which is crazy when you think about it now, right? It was in a garage in Santa Monica and I went and I met them. There was only four of them there. Wow. It was like a hangar. It was like empty and there was a job opportunity there. And then I was like, but there's nothing like this in Ireland. Like, I really want there to be something. I know I'm really good at what I do. Like, I have my own issues with like, yeah, I'd be really hard on myself in a lot of areas, but when it comes to my work, and now when it comes to law, like, I have no problem saying I'm the best at what I do. And I knew that back then. So I was like, my focus was never monetary. It's so weird. Like, I was like, I want these stories to be broken. I wanted pride around stories. I wanted them to be fast. And I wanted to create a brand that was quick and fast and just really, really good. So that was really my focus. But I remember making the decision and telling my parents that I was leaving my very cushy job to start it up. And a part of me thought, like, maybe I'll build it to a certain point and just sell it. I don't know. I don't think I had an end plan with it, which is really strange when I think back now. I just wanted to create it and do it and go for it and jump off the cliff. And there was no, what happens when I get off the cliff? I was just like, I have to jump off. Like, it was, I'm very like intense like that about things, which has really helped me and helped the business. And that's why the business is still here, to be honest, because there's loads of people who'd be like, I'm not going to go over that edge. And yeah, they would have just walked away.
Especially in media. It's very different, I think, when people are setting up a traditional kind of business whereby it's kind of obvious. So, you know, you buy the cup for one, you sell it for five, margin of four.
Media is a nightmare.
And where you were, you're going from traditional, and like, it's not that long ago, but in real terms it is, because traditional and digital, it was a big mashup there. And even still, there's still a big shakeup in terms of where media is going.
Yeah. And like, when I was in my newspapers, like, I didn't even know how the advertising side of it worked. I never had even talked to someone on the advertising team, which is mental when you think about it now, because that's, I suppose, when I look back in hindsight, the things I would do differently. Like, I just started gossiping, like, oh, I'll make money. And I made a cash flow projection. I'm like, I'll do this and I'll do that. And I did get Revlon on board as our first ever partner. Like, we launched Goss with Revlon.
Wow.
Yeah, in the background. But it obviously wasn't that easy. So the first year was such a struggle, because what you're saying there, I think people, again, this is also mental to me, 10 years in, people still, legitimate business people, would be like, how do you make money? Like, genuinely will ask me that question. So just to explain it, if anyone's listening and doesn't know how, obviously all the content we do is free. So like, I have journalists, I have a team of journalists who just create content for free. Whereas with a newspaper or magazine, you're paying €1, €2 to buy it. So ours is an advertising revenue model. And that isn't just clickable ads on the site. I think that's another misconception. That would be a very small percentage of the money that we make. It's editorial campaigns, it's partnerships, it's collaborations, it's events. Like, we do events for clients now. It's the Gossies, it's Goss.ie Women of the Year Awards, a lot of our awards. It's covering Love Island and how we do that and how we partner with brands on that. So there's a million products. We have our own studio now in there as well, and we do productions in there too, podcasts. Oh, cool. Yeah. Amazing. So there's a million and one things that we actually do. But it's funny to me that people are still like, but how do you make money? So I think that's still a bit of a confusion. But look, the first year was very tough, very tough. Like, I had come from a very cushy, well-paid job to having no money straight away, pretty much. I sold my car to set it up. And then I remember like getting on the bus, like, to try and go to investment meetings and like try and convince people to invest in Goss. But I will say, I stopped that very soon in. I'd say I only gave it 6 months, because number one, it was the biggest waste of time, I personally think. Now, it depends on what the brand is, but I know founders that founded businesses at the same time as me, and every single one of them are out of business now. But every single one of them got investment. Every single one of them had investment boards. They had million-euro loans from AIB and stuff like that. So I kind of was watching people do that and realizing how bad it was for business, because their sole trajectory was about getting in the money. It wasn't about how is this business running? How is the product going? And I just saw it happen over and over and over again. So within the first 6 months, I started to see it happening a little bit, and I honestly just didn't have the time. And I remember I did, I'm not going to name names now today, but I did my last investment pitch with a really well-known like investment sort of organization, let's say. And I had been put in that meeting with the top person there because so many people were like, you have to meet this girl. Like this girl, like she's going to go places. We don't know where or what's happening, but you have to meet her. And I remember getting the bus there with my last €2 of the week. I was so broke. It was only 6 months in now. And I remember in the meeting, he said to me, this is just a hobby. I would never invest in this.
He actually said that?
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Like, and I remember leaving and just bawling, crying outside. And like the fact is, again, these sort of conversations, I don't know if they happen with men. Maybe they do.
That's so highly unprofessional though, to say that to anybody, regardless of gender, regardless.
And keep in mind, like I had these 6 months of like having no money, having no car, trying to make it work, doing my hardest to set up a business, to hire staff, and just to be told this is a hobby, it's never going to make it. So I remember at that point being like,
it's just so patronizing. Like it's just
But that's exactly how it was all the time. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. And
was that the moment? Was that the kind of, because I wanted to kind of curious, I was curious, it was really interesting to hear your thoughts on investment there. Was that the moment where you're like, I'm just going to do this myself. I'm not going to take
it. Yeah, 100%. And like I had given talks for another kind of organization that invest heavily into Irish businesses, and they weren't paying me to do them. They just were like, oh, your kind of zest for business and your ambition, it's infectious. So I was doing talks for like up and coming people, but the organization had never given me any money. So I remember I did the very last talk, and I know
I have a real problem with that.
I know
people asking people to do things for free.
Now, obviously it was only a year or two in business, but again, when I look back on this now, I'm like, I can't believe I was 25 and people like that, huge organizations, like, will you please come and talk for free, but we're never going to invest in you and we're not going to pay for you to even come today. Well, I obviously said yes to everything. Like I do think at the start, you have to get the business out there.
Yeah, there's a real trade-off. It depends on like, what is the opportunity here? Are they giving me a massive opportunity to speak in front of like thousands of influential people, or am I putting bums on seats for them? That's how I kind of look at it.
If you're about it now, I'll tell you. But at the time, I was like, maybe there's going to be investment in the room and maybe this and maybe that. So I remember talking to one of the head people in the organization after, and I was like, you know, I've never got any money from you guys. And he said something like, oh yeah, well, media just wouldn't be of interest to us. And then I just never did a talk with them ever again.
But the live event was.
Yeah. So that happened. So to this day, we're 10 years of business. I've never once even got a euro of funding from any organization in Ireland. And I tried all of them. I tried all of them for all sorts of funding. I never got anything. Wow. And it was always denied. I filled out all these forms that take hours and hours. They had all these female funding things. This is all back in 2014. I do think things are a little bit different now, but there was all these kind of funds specifically for women, but then they only really wanted like high tech. They were going to get millions in Silicon Valley. And like, I really think investment needs to be split up into two different areas. There should be specific investment just for small, medium-sized businesses. Most of these organizations don't value them, don't care about them, don't think they'll get their money back, don't think they'll ever kind of have an international, I suppose, scope. And I think that's really sad. Like, why is the international side of it important if we're promoting Irish businesses? So yeah, I became really, really disillusioned with it. And then I was watching other people that had a bare idea getting like 2 million in investment because it was a tech product, but hadn't started their business yet, hadn't any real expertise, but had brought on X, Y, and Z person. Now, all of those businesses are also gone now, but I just found that really tough because I was like, God, the things I could do with even 10 grand, and they were getting like millions. So I suppose I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder about it. So I just stopped even trying for it then. I was like, I just can't do this. And now I think it's one of the best things I've ever didn't do is getting investment, because I see companies with investment boards making really tough decisions, not really involving the CEO, changing the brand. like, I would feel sick if that happened.
Especially over the last few years, the things you probably would have had to do there in COVID and things like that.
Yeah.
If you were like, okay,
and COVID actually changed our business, right? So a lot of people have asked me in the last year or so, people keep being like, oh, Goss is everywhere now. I thought Goss has always been everywhere, but apparently it's more so everywhere. And it was all COVID. So when COVID happened, we lost all of our advertising overnight. I mean, all of our planned spend for the next 6 months. Gone. Wow. Zero.
So what was happening, Ali? Like, you were getting phone calls going, hey, you know, the campaign for Q2, scrap.
Yeah,
it.
And then invoices that were owed, being like, we can't pay this either.
Wow.
So like, literally, it was, I remember finding that really tough. It was literally like being back in 2014 again. I was like, I have no money and I'm starting from scratch again. But I lived on my own during COVID. So I'm type 1 diabetic. So I was like really high risk. So I didn't see anyone for about 6 months at the start. Yeah.
That's exceptional.
It was very intense. Tough. Yeah. I think even like by month six, all I did was go for a walk outside. Like I didn't spend time with people properly. So obviously I was going a little bit insane. But that's why I went back to college, because I was like, I need to do something. I need to like achieve something. I knew the pandemic was going to be years. Like I just had a feeling. So before Leo even did his like big speech, I told the girls to take all of their stuff out of the office. I was like, we're not going to be back here for a while. And they were like, no, I don't think so. It's only going to be 2 weeks. Remember, it was a 2 week lockdown or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, trust me when I tell you this. So I got everyone to take their stuff. And I remember the lockdown happened and I did a video call with a couple of other media publishers. One of them actually, yeah, there was a couple, how many? Three of them. One of them actually wasn't in business anymore, but had a really good idea of it. So we all jumped on this video chat, like really high ranking people. They were all guys and then me, the little girl in the corner. But it was actually nice to be included in that chat, because it was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, maybe I'm not being looked at as a little girl anymore. Yeah. But anyway, throughout the course of the conversation, I said, right, I'm going to get rid of the office. It was the first thing that I did. And everyone was a bit unsure about it. And I was like, no, I'm going to get rid of it. Because otherwise, other people on the call were talking about letting staff go, lowering their wages and stuff like that. And I was like, no, I'm not lowering anyone's wages. And I'm not letting anybody go. And I didn't at all during COVID. Nobody. Okay. So let the office go before we were even in a proper lockdown. Like I just immediately took that cost away. And then I actually sold my first ever campaign to Bumble, the dating app, which was a series called Staying Connected, which was about how are people going to stay connected throughout the pandemic, because Bumble have a friends section and a business section. So it was in general. So did that deal, got money in, wage bill sorted for the first like 2 months or something like that. I can't remember. So straight away, I was just like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I remember saying to all of my editorial team, we're going to be remembered for how we act during COVID. And a lot of publications pulled back on the content, except for like hardcore news places. Obviously they were 24/7, but our competitors, they seemed to have less staff and they seemed to be working less hours. And I said to my team, I want it to be the opposite. I want us to give everybody comfort. And I want people to remember when this is over that we went out of our way to actually deliver more. So we were like doing podcasts through laptops and stuff. We did a big drive for the COVID pandemic, like to create fundraising for the healthcare staff and stuff like that. We did a huge Met Gala thing where it was the week the Met Gala was meant to be on. We got Andrew Fitzsimons, like the Kardashians hairdresser, and we got everybody to dress up at home and like donate, right? So that was the first thing we did. Then I think the best decision I ever made during that was that I kept doing the Gossies, right? So the Gossies 2020 happened 2 weeks before the pandemic. So we got that 2021 in, which was great.
Yeah.
2021, we were still in COVID, right? And I was like, no. And it was in January or February 2021. I can't remember the exact date of it, but we were back in a lockdown. Do you remember we got randomly put back into a lockdown in 2021?
I'm trying to remember so much of it's a blur, right?
Yeah.
We went in and then went out again around that time.
So we were in a time where it was that time they actually closed the schools and everything. Do you remember all of January? Because my siblings are teachers. They were all not in work. So it was like a full month of that. But I was like, let's do a virtual online Gossies. Me, have I ever produced a live show in my life? No. Not for TV. This was a live stream. But I do have these kind of other sides to me where like I've acted and directed and made little films and stuff like that. So I kind of had the drive to do it, but I'd never done it before. We were only allowed to have 6 people in the room, and that was going to have to include Lucy Kennedy, who was going to host. And we were going to do it live into everybody's homes. And oh my God, was that such a success. Lifestyle Sports came on as a title sponsor. We had Nikki Byrne, Nicola Coughlin, Laura Whitmore, everybody dressed up at home. There was like coverage in like magazines of everybody at home dressing up for the Gossies 2021. It was one of the biggest successes we've had with the Gossies. It was wild. And so many brands were so keen to do it because there was budget and marketing budgets there for brands. They didn't, they just didn't know what to do with it because COVID kept happening. But I was like, let's focus all of this online. Like, you know, with Lifestyle Sports, we did a discount all night long when you were tuning in. Then we did that all as a live record. And then we actually put it all on YouTube. I think I got 50,000 people tuned in to watch it then as well. So then when Love Island, the next song, summer came, we did a virtual online countdown show where we zoomed into the Love Islanders. I actually shot it in my back garden at the time. If you look at the pictures, it looks like we're in some mad, like, sunny location, my back garden. So I think one of the things I'm probably the best at is innovation and adaptation. It's adapting to situations and innovating in them. And I think there was just too long a period with some other brands. They didn't know what to do. But because I'm bootstrapped and because there's no investment, all I had to do was make money. So I had to immediately be like, what is going to make me money and what's going to keep the team, you know, in good spirits and employed? Like, they were the three things that were on my mind. So I really persevered through COVID, and some of the meetings I tried to get over the years with top, top brands weren't happening. That was one of my biggest struggles before COVID. I'd be like begging to meet someone really high up and they were like, we can't, we're this, we're that. And I was learning that they all had like these relationships with other publishers and they just didn't want to kind of rock the boat, yeah, sort of thing, which was really frustrating because I was like, we have like the most unreal audience, you know, like the growth of Goss is next to none. Like, we've not spent a cent on growing our followers or anything like that. Like, we're growing rapidly all the time and no one was like, none of the top people I wanted were listening. But during COVID, I was like, jump on a Zoom. Where's the
There was a great accessibility in COVID, wasn't there? There was like a big accessibility thing.
Very ballsy said that to most people. I was like, I'll see you at 3 o'clock on Zoom. What are you doing? Where are you going? So we got a couple of initial deals with some of those people. And now they are all, to this day, some of our biggest customers. They never left once they jumped on board. And that goes back to my main issue of the legitimacy thing, because if you were subjectively looking at Goss as a brand, take me out of it, take the female focus out of it, the numbers, the volume, the fact that like Page Six, Fox News have run our content. If you actually look at it from bare bone, it is madness for an advertising agency or a brand to not think they should place their ads there. But when you look at it more objective or more subjectively, I suppose, where it's like, it's women, it's young, it's me, I think that's sometimes where the issues arise. But as a brand itself, and I think that's why after COVID we started working with brands, I think now we've been a bit more legitimized. So it took getting maybe some of those bigger clients in. It took doing those Gossies by myself, like in a room, holding up a sheet to Lucy Kennedy, being like, we're going to Nikki Byrne now. Like, she couldn't see like who we were going to, like running something like that while being highly, highly like at risk of getting COVID and being in that room. I remember we had a safety officer and his main job was actually to keep everybody away from me, because like at this point we didn't even have the vaccine yet. And I still risked all that to like make money and do an amazing show. And like a huge part of it for me as well was actually just to keep the connections with all the celebrities as well. I wanted them to remember. So then when we did come back in 2022, that was the year we flew Maura Higgins over for the Gossies. It's one of the biggest years we had. And everyone on that night was like, the Gossies 2021, like, helped me get through.
And the goodwill is there.
Yeah.
Where's the growth coming from, Ali? Because you're saying it's growing exponentially. People are always curious, but like, what platforms are growing? So for you, where are you seeing a lot of growth?
So currently right now, TikTok is absolutely exploding for us in the sense that like in the last 24 hours, we've gone up 6,000 followers.
Wow.
So it's really funny because when we started TikTok, and that's the thing, like we were the first online news publication to start an Instagram account. Like when I think back to the things I did at the beginning, everybody thought it was so weird because Instagram was like a picture of food and I was screenshotting the article, putting them on the feed and being like, read goss.ie for more. Yeah. And then when stories started, we, again, this is going to sound so bizarre because you're like, everybody does that. But we genuinely were the first people to put the article on the stories to read more. In Ireland. Isn't that insane?
But it's funny, all these great ideas seem so obvious now.
So obvious.
But like at the time, you're like, I'll try it.
And some of the brands in Ireland still don't do that. So anyway, with TikTok, as soon as that became a thing in COVID, I was like, we're doing it, jump on it. We're going on to TikTok. But the girls really struggled with what we were supposed to do on it. And they were really trying to follow what was being done everywhere else and what TikTok was being used for. And we were getting like 11 views on average. We'd like 600 followers for a year. Like it just, or 6 months, I think it was. Just wasn't growing at all. And they really wanted to get give up. And I was like, no, we have to go back to what is it that we do best? Why do people read Goss? And we all sat down and I was like, why do people read Goss? What do they want to see? They're like, they want to see the article, really. They want to see what the story is. I was like, great. Put the images on TikTok of, like, let's say it's a J-Lo Ben story having a fight. Put the picture up and then have a caption of Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck have been spotted having a fight. And that literally completely changed our TikTok.
Really? So, and would you be like green screening over it? Like,
no, I think that's ludicrous. I hate that. Okay. Yeah,
so
no.
It's just the article.
Just the article. Wow. I don't think personally, see, I feel like a lot of brands are doing that because that's what other TikTokers are doing. But yeah. We're not a TikToker. We're a media brand. It's about the story. It's not about us. That's how I feel about it. So when we started doing that, it really started to go wild. And then the thing I suppose that in the industry would be said about us the most is that we're really fast. We're faster than anybody else. So that's why we'd rank so high on Google. That's why our Instagram has 8 million impressions a week, because we just immediately have the story. It's like there. So I said to the girls that, like, whatever you deem viable for Instagram as a quick straightaway story, start putting it on TikTok. So you know that Jeremy Allen White video, is that his name, the guy, I should know this. See, now you can tell I don't write the stories. The guy from The Bear, you know that Calvin Klein ad that's gone viral?
Yeah.
So one of our girls 3 weeks ago spotted it as it was going viral. If you search that video now, our page comes up. It's now on 68 million views.
Wow.
On our page.
Are you seeing a transfer across then, Ali, to the article?
Yeah, definitely. Now with TikTok, it's not as much. Instagram, I mean, 60% of our traffic probably comes from there some days.
Wow.
Yeah, not every day. Like Google, it would still be really high. TikTok is slightly more difficult to actually track because there's no links on the photos, which I think maybe might start happening soon, is that you're going to be able to click on it.
Yeah.
But we see a surge 100% in the amount of people going onto the site. And then we see a surge on TikTok. So for example, when that Jeremy video went viral, we grew by 16,000 followers in 5 hours. So it wasn't just that we got a couple of million views and then they effed off. They actually stayed. So that's really what's happened with us, is that we're very good at going viral or having viral content, but people then stay when they find the brand. So Instagram has been the most organic growth. Like we're on 152,000 at the minute. We've never spent a single euro on a campaign trying to get followers. All of that's been organic. And like some weeks I'll see, like I do a report with the editorial team every week to see how everything's going. And on an average week, we reach about 18 million across all of our platforms. So then we'll break down into where it's coming from. And Instagram is always around the 8 million mark, but it's mad. Like I'll see like a story of us covering something that happened on Love Island maybe. And it's like 500,000 impressions, 400 comments, you know, 100 reshares.
So like, it's serious engagement. It's not just you getting all these views. It's serious engagement. That's the difference.
And I really feel like you only get engagement when you do it organically. Because if we had just bought loads of followers, the engagement would be 1%. Like, you know, or under 1%, to be honest. Our engagement's really high, even on our stories. So like we do a lot of surveys, sometimes for clients, sometimes for us. We average about 5,000 people take part in that. Like, have you ever heard the likes of that? Like, so in terms of like media brands, I haven't. Like, I don't know another brand that does it the way that we do. And we do things very differently, very uniquely. Sometimes that annoys people. Sometimes people don't understand it. 9 times out of 10, they end up just doing it themselves eventually. That's what I've seen. And it's been frustrating for me to watch. You know, even sometimes when I go onto the Instagram, I'll see our feed and I'll see a competitor's feed and it is the exact same, but it's 5 minutes later every time. They're just watching what we're doing. And
so
they're...
speed is everything for you. That is your defining factor, is speed. Over the last 12 months, though, what's been the biggest challenge you're facing as a founder?
It's been a really good year, to be honest. I'm trying to think. I actually think one of the biggest challenges being a founder, being an entrepreneur, is actually building a team. I actually think that's the most difficult, most stressful thing for me, is getting the right staff, getting everybody on board with the right ideas, putting loads of time and effort and education. Like I offer courses to my team as well in UCD, and making sure that they stay. You know, I think we're in a bit of a pandemic at the moment with employees. I don't know if you've heard that yourself.
It's very, every entrepreneur I speak to
it's very
has
hard.
That problem.
And because we're a small team and then there's 10 of us, if two people leave Goss, it has a massive effect. Whereas if you leave like one of the big fives or whatever, they probably don't even remember your name.
Yeah.
It's very different.
It's churn is built in, you know, they know it's going to be a churn.
I find that hard. And then I think it's more myself just putting pressure on growing the brand year on year. So like since 2020, we grew 200% in revenue in 2021. Another 200% in 2022. So it's trying to keep that going all the time.
They're serious numbers. Like what's driving that?
honestly, what I was saying to you there during COVID, there was just a massive change in the fact that I was able to access clients that I hadn't before.
Okay.
And then I think we got more legitimized during that time, that people were just like taking us a bit more seriously. So we were getting more briefs. In terms of like what we do and how we do, we've actually done everything the same. Nothing has changed. Like, this is why I find it funny when people are like, "Costs is everywhere now." Nothing has changed. We've just been given the opportunities now, and we weren't, like, doors were being slammed in my face, basically, you know, before then. That is literally the only change. The company itself is run the exact same way. Not one thing has changed how I run Goss. It's the same. We just now have more money and more opportunities. And with more money, more opportunities comes like bringing in, you know, really good team members and growing the brand. Like, so for me, in terms of like a challenge, it's keeping the revenue growth really, really high. It's keeping the readership really high. So like, we grew 45% during COVID. We've never dropped that in readership. So that's still there, still growing, small bit every time. And like, we're at 1 million readers now. We would have been at like per month, we would have been at 750 last year. So like, there is growth constantly there. So that would be one of the big focuses for me. And when you're in the media industry, like, there are so many media brands, so you're fighting against everyone. So it's always a challenge trying to make sure the brands pick you or advertise with you. And then, yeah, like, one of my big focus has been more events. We're going to do a lot more this year. Obviously, we have the Gossies, we've been of the year. We're bringing in another event now at the end of the summer. And it's trying to just make sure that that keeps going and keeps getting bigger. Like, I don't want anything to ever be the same.
What's your vision for it now? Because at the start you said, just wanted to start. What's your vision now? Because you seem so energetic and so switched on to the business.
Yeah.
Do you have a vision now? Where do you want it to go?
I don't think I'm ever going to sell it, which is the number one thing. And people keep asking about that as well. I just want to build it to be what it can be and keep it there. That's kind of what I want. Like, I think it's already the biggest Irish entertainment news site in the country. That's that. But I think in terms of an advertising perspective, I want it to be the number one option for people. I want people to realize this is where people want to be. Like, this is where you're going to get your biggest return. In terms of the actual brand itself, I think it has been really successful for years before we were even making good money. I think a lot of people know Goss, they're aware of it. That to me is a success. When someone knows the name, or, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, I was driving somewhere and I was in some random shop in Ross Grey or something. And I heard a radio station being like, "Oh, I heard this on goss.ie today." And I was like, yes. Like, those small wins still mean so much to me.
You need them though as a founder. You need those little boosts. And
they
often
mean
they're
so
random.
Much.
Yeah, they're a random thing. Like, I was kind of laughing at myself there as you were telling me about, like, nothing's changed. Like, another 10-year overnight success, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what changed? What changed? And often it's just, you have to stay alive to thrive, right?
Yeah.
You just have to stay in the game and things will shift and things will change. But, you know, during COVID, you know, I heard a great quote. It's often in times of crisis, even the sign of momentum is everything.
Yeah.
Even the
and
sign
you have to
of activity.
Believe in the signs. Like, I've heard people say on your podcast too, I've heard a lot of entrepreneurs talk about failure and the importance of failure and all that. And I do understand that in ways, and I definitely have failed within the business.
Exactly.
But I also have the view of failure is not an option, and that is also why I'm here where I am now. Like, genuinely, if I was to tell you some of the things that happened in the business, you'd be like, why on earth did you stay? Like, my family, about three and a half years in, were like, why are you still doing this? Like, I was just miserable.
Had an intervention.
Yeah, literally. I was just miserable all the time.
And when Ali, sit down. We all need to talk. Why is everyone here?
And when you have a company on your own, you should remember too, like, there's nobody to talk. You can't tell your staff that you're having issues with the company. You can't. Like, you have to be
is
like,
is it lonely?
Hey. Definitely has been really lonely. Yeah, definitely has. In like making decisions and having the responsibility on yourself. Being on my own is fine, but dealing with the consequences of things on your own and having so much pressure just on your own shoulders. That's what I was saying to you about, like, staff being a really big issue, which it is for a lot of entrepreneurs at the moment. If like two or three people leave Goss, let's say, or even one person, who's going to do that work? So like, it falls back on my shoulders, and it reminds you of the early days of Goss. Like, I'd be awake at night being like, can I pay people's wages tomorrow. Okay, yeah, I'll pay that person's wages. I'm not going to be able to pay my wages. I'm not going to be able to pay my rent this month, but look, I'll do it. Like, these are the way, this is the way my head was thinking all the time. So you can imagine friends and family being like, why on earth are you putting yourself through this? And like, I honestly see entrepreneurship as a bit of an illness. Like, it's like an addiction.
It's an addiction. It's definitely
like normal, sane people would not put yourself through the hardships. Like, and it's, no one will ever understand the hardships until you do it yourself. And when you do it yourself and you're bootstrapped, it is a different, like, I know a lot of entrepreneurs that have had investments since day one and a board from day one. Of course, they still have their own struggles, and I get that. And they've, you know, been able to do some amazing things. But I'm always like, you will never understand what it's like to not be able to make a wage run. You'll never understand what it's like to not be able to pay your own rent. And that is what happens generally with most startups in the first 3 years. It's rare you'd hear a story where that hasn't. And I know like multimillionaires, billionaires now, their wage bill is a million a month. And they'd say to me still, Jesus, the odd month, you're close to getting that 1 million across. Like, the problems never really go. But
you've
with
bootstrapped
time,
this entirely yourself. This is 100%. Entirely your business.
Yeah. And coming from not a business background or advertising background, it's a bit mad. So I definitely put myself in positions where I was like ridiculously broke. Like, you know, when I look back now, it's crazy I didn't save any money to start the business. Like, I was overly confident that it was going to go well. So they're kind of some of the lessons from the beginning. But the thing that I have, and it's in all areas of like my professional life, is that like failure isn't an option, but also there's nothing on this planet that nobody is incapable of, like, or anybody's incapable of. If you said to me tomorrow, you need to set up a chip shop and it has to be the number one chip shop in Ireland, I'd be like, no problem. It doesn't matter what the task is or what the goal is, I will do it. And that's how I am. It's just the way I've been since I was a teenager. Like, I'm very focused on just doing everything, kind of beating everybody's expectations and proving to myself that I can do it. And then when it's done, I'm like, okay, what's next? And that's why it's an illness, like, because when it's done, I should be happy. But I'm like, no, I need to grow more now. I need to do this. Like,
how did you juggle this? Because it seems like you obviously have a full-time job. How did you juggle college then on top of this?
I know. So 2020 was a little bit easier because obviously we were all in the depths of lockdown. So we weren't going anywhere in the evenings. So like, I was doing it in the evenings and stuff like that. It was grand. And it honestly saved me. Like, I remember watching the news. I remember we'd never know if they were going to extend the lockdown or not. And all my family, they live outside of Dublin. So even when I did want to start seeing them from a distance or whatever, I wasn't allowed to leave. Do you remember? Eventually, they allowed people living alone to drive to family. But at the beginning, they didn't. And I remember one day, Leo Varadkar being on the TV being like, right, we're actually going to extend it again. And I remember just bawling, crying, just being like, when is this going to end? Like, I just can't deal with it anymore. And then I was like, oh, my lecture starts in 5 minutes. So I had to pull myself together and do the lecture. So it really saved me from losing my mind. 2021 started to get a little bit harder because things started to open up towards the end of 2021. So I remember those summer exams being really tough because I was like, right, I'm starting to get busy again. And then 2022 was very tough.
How long was the course?
3 years.
3 years. Okay.
Yeah. So 2022 was actually the year that they took into account for our overall marks. So this is why it's bizarre that I got the highest marks out of the whole college, because obviously 2022 was so busy for me. But again, I suppose I'm just extremely psychotically determined that I was like, I don't want to do this degree unless I'm going to be the best. That's actually what I kept saying to myself. I didn't actually mean the best in the class. I more meant I want to be the best that I can be. So I just, it was really, really tough. I'd be in work with my law books underneath me while typing back to an email, doing the lectures in the evenings, going into college on the weekends. It was really tough. It was really tough. And like, I don't know if you know anyone who's done a law degree, but like the amount of reading, like I would think I was reading 100 cases a week at one point. And then in the exam, you'd remember the cases, remember the judge, remember the outcome, and then apply it to an answer. So like, it was just such a huge challenge, but I absolutely loved it. And I really thrived on it. And it was really nice to have something else other than GOSS be my focus, because it is very hard when your whole life is your career. And I know this is also a professional thing, but it was different. This was like a personal challenge. I also wanted to study law when I was in school. I just didn't get the points because I got diabetes 3 days before the Leaving Cert. Was really, really sick.
Wow.
And I ended up only getting my fourth choice, which was English and New Media. So I'm very much a believer of everything happens for a reason.
There's always a route. I think this is important for students, any like younger students listening. There's always a route. There's this massive pressure that when you're 16, you look at a piece of paper and go, oh, I want to be an accountant. And that sets the rest of your life. And then you don't get it. But there's always a route. There's always a second route.
There's always a back
there.
Door. Yeah. And like, obviously when you're 18, or I was 17 when I went to college, you know that you can go back and do a degree when you're over 25. You know, you can do anything then. That seems so far away to me.
It does.
I was like, no.
And everything's very binary when you're that age. Yeah. You do or you don't. You get it or you don't. You get
it's
Dublin or Galway
the best
or you don't.
Thing that ever happened that I mean, I never would have ended up owning Goss if I had done a law degree. So like, I'm very much, so I think that's maybe why when really bad things were going on the last couple of years, I was very much like, look, there's going to be a good ending to this. Like, I just always have to believe that myself. And like, that has happened. The things that we're doing now and the money that we're making now, I was telling people in 2017 we were going to do that. And people were like, okay, good for you.
It's the old adage though. And it's so true. If you want something done, ask a busy person.
Yes.
Because you always think you're busy and then something else happens and then you think you're busy and you're like, something else is added on. But you're able to juggle and you're able to manage. Certain people are. Definitely entrepreneurs are able to juggle and prioritize ruthlessly. You said you want to do more in law. What do you want to do?
I don't know. So like, obviously I work with the Department of Justice a little bit, and I'm trying to bring in legislation. So I obviously kind of worked with them on the COCO's law legislation that was brought in about revenge porn or intimate image abuse, it's called now. So I'm trying to work on other legislation. It's basically an anti-trolling bill. So it's hard to explain, but it's trying to monitor anonymous accounts being online and holding social media companies solely responsible for defamatory comments that are put online. I'm sure you've heard about loads of these threads that are online that are massively defamatory. Also, you know, people can like, you can have a death threat that's anonymous. You can be threatened to be hurt that's anonymous. There's all these weird things going on right now in the world of social media. But I'm trying to work on bringing in a bill that would not allow that anymore. Amazing. There's some way to track them. It's very tricky for Ireland. Yeah. We're part of the EU. So GDPR is making it really difficult. But Australia is very similar to us in terms of their common law jurisdiction and they have an anti-trolling bill. So I've kind of tried to base it on that.
Okay.
But I do work in a law firm now as well.
Okay.
I know. It doesn't even make sense. With McKenna and Co Solicitors. So I'm working in their I know you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Oh yeah, I am, yeah. I am.
Oh, I'm working in their litigation department. So yeah, because I wanted to, my actual plan was to just pass the bar after college because the exams and the topics we did in Griffith are pretty much the same.
Okay.
So I could have probably done it straight away, but I was like, I have to take a break from study. Like it literally took over my life. But then as 2 months passed by after the exams, I was just like, I'm missing it so much. I'm missing cases. When I was in Griffith, I got accepted into the Innocence Project. So I was working with real life cases.
What is that?
It's basically when people are trying to overturn their convictions, saying that they're wrongful. So it's a lot of like murder charges, very serious assaults. And there's only a few in the world, but Ireland is one of the hubs. So people might know through Kim Kardashian because she does a lot of work in America that's very focused on people being arrested for like very small drug charges and stuff. In Ireland, it's more so like wrongful convictions, DNA evidence not being that great at the time. Mm. So years later, trying to get them their life back and get them out of prison. So that was the first time I was working with real life people and working on real cases. So when the degree ended, I was just like, I want to work on cases. I'm missing it. I'm missing it so much. So it's only one day a week, which is amazing that McKenna Co even let me do that. But I'm absolutely loving it. And I'm working on loads of cases and I work with loads of barristers now. And I was in the forecourts last week. And yeah, I love it. But I don't think it's something I can like full-time do right now. Like there's a lot more to do with Goss. It's more something I want to keep my toe in, and having the law background and understanding cases and precedent and all that, it makes it so much easier for me to go into Minister McEntee, which I do. Like I went and I met with her a couple months ago and ask for things. So like, for example, the last time I met with her, I asked her for this thing called a Norwich Pharmacal Order. It's basically a high court order that forces social media giants to unmask anonymous accounts, right? So you can actually do it, but obviously to go to the high court, you're going to be spending about 50 grand, right? So it's not really
done. No one
has
the resources to do that.
Now, Lisa McGowan did it. She's an influencer called Lisa's Lust List. She paid a lot of money and went to court and got the Norwich Pharmacal Order, and she won a case against Facebook and got people unmasked, which is fantastic. But people can't afford that. So the last time I spoke to Minister McEntee, I asked her, would she bring it down from the High Court to the Circuit Court, which is a lot more feasible. It's still expensive, like all cases are, but more people could do that. So there's an amendment now coming in for the Defamation Act and she's included it.
Amazing.
So the only reason I know what a Norwich Pharmacal Order is because I studied it in college. I didn't even know about it. Even when I saw Lisa's case there wasn't really an explanation about it because people obviously wouldn't understand all the jargon. I just knew she'd gone in, but then when I read it, I was like, that's a normal pharmacal order. So the fact that that's happened, I wouldn't have been able to do that without my understanding. So that was my drive. It was to prove myself a little bit, but more so, I want to work on legislation. I want to lobby the government. I want to try and make change happen. What can I do? I'll learn about it. And even like I work with women's aid quite a lot. So I took family law as an elective, understanding barring orders, domestic abuse. Like there's so many issues with that and that side of things. So I have an interest in that too. So it was purely out of interest, I'd say, and just my mental weird drive that I have. But now it's like started a whole new career path as well, which is not what I would have expected. I probably didn't plan to actually work in law. I just wanted to have the understanding, but I just love it so much. I do love it. And it's helpful for business to know too. I'm writing all my letters now. I'm like, dear, like they joke in the legal
firm. To whom it may concern.
Yeah, they joke in the legal firm that all I do is threaten to sue people now because I'm pure litigation. So I'm like, you've 7 days to respond. I'm like,
but isn't it ironic? Like, you know, I always love a little bit of irony. Isn't it great that like, you know, 10 years on, Goss is here now. And the first two letters you got as a founder were legal letters.
I know, they were. I was like, yay, our first post. And I was like, oh no.
Oh, it's got a window. That's unusual.
Why does this say legal? I'm like, what?
Confidential and urgent. Oh, yeah. Two words I never want to hear when I get a letter.
Oh, haven't had them since then though. Well, actually, sorry. When you work in media, you get loads of threats to be sued for defamation and stuff like that. But we're so careful. We've never had a case against us ever. I'm like touching all the wood
touch,
in the room.
Touch the fake wood.
Now I can represent myself, so it'll be grand.
What would you love to kind of like see for the next 12 months for Goss? I know you're exploding in growth, 200% revenue, 1 million reads per month. Where would you see the kind of the next evolution for like, you've got the Gossies coming up, but beyond that, because you seem wildly ambitious. Like I'm sure you have plans beyond that.
To be honest, like one of the big things is almost, I don't want to say it this big, but almost starting our own broadcasting channel in terms of like really focusing in on the broadcasting side of it. Like, you know, obviously I used to love Exposé, used to be on Exposé, that's gone. There's no real show here that's replaced that sort of entertainment, celebrity, interviews, content. So like the Gosscast is our podcast and I actually didn't do it last year because of the degree. I was like, I have to pull back something. But we've had so many people come up to us being like, please bring back the Gosscast. And I was in London last week at a meeting with a talent agent and she had listened to the Gosscast as well. And I was like, that's mad. And she was like, no, there are no podcasts in Ireland or the UK by journalists or people in a media company talking about the stories that are in the news, because like E! News and all that, they've all really changed over the years. That's what I would have grown up with. So I'd love to do a lot more of that. I'd love to really focus a lot more on the female content. So the Women of the Year Awards, I don't know if you know much about them, but they're like my pride and joy. That's not a celebrity focused awards at all. It's for women in business that are not really in the spotlight. So like Shorla won, Shorla Oncology won like the best business at that awards show.
When are they on?
They're on every October. So they were just in October.
Keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, Grani Shoiga hosts them for us. But we do a local hero award where people in their community nominate a woman in their, and oh my God, in their community, the tears, like it's just these women who've been through the most horrific things and they've like dedicated their lives to giving back to people. So that day is so special. Like we have athletes as well that are nominated and win. It's just the most amazing event that we do and everyone's just in tears and inspired. And it is so bloody hard being a woman. Like, and when you're in a room like that where our sole purpose of that day is to be there for each other, it sounds so corny, but like Miriam McCallaghan was crying at it. Like we were all crying. We were just like, it's so hard. And women are also very much pitted against each other as well. So I kind of wanted to create something that actually just put all that to bed and let us all kind of almost feel a bit bad about ourselves. Not bad, but when you're sitting in a room and you've someone standing up there saying they've lost their whole family in a car crash and they nearly died themselves and have now dedicated their lives to bringing love and happiness to their community, you sit there and you go, what can I do with my life? What can I do with my platform? And I think that's what's changed a lot with me is I'm kind of using Goss now to give other people platforms. And it was after I used Goss to use my, the story I wrote, The Truth About My Sex Tape. We'd never done anything like that before. And it was a huge decision to decide to put that on Goss. I could have just done a blog post somewhere. But since then, I've been like, I think because all of our readers are women, well, 95% are women, why not become a voice for women and a place for women? So that's something I really want to see now in the next 12 months is that even more so. We're working on a couple of series where we'll be speaking to women in business, speaking to women in their localities. That's a really big focus for me. And yeah, more successful awards, building the team out more. Like, to be honest, my goal is to step back as CEO probably soon enough. Like, I'm still always going to own the company and probably be the creative director or something. But I definitely would like to step back a little bit more, probably more so 2025, 2026. So that's kind of on the horizon. So I obviously have to build the company and the team to a certain point to be able to do that. But that's definitely kind of next, I'd say.
How do you balance this? Because we talk about business, brain and body. Where do you find the time to look after yourself?
Oh my God. Like the last few weeks have been, I've actually had a really stressful start to 2024 with the business. Just a million and one things happening. Kind of always happens in the lead up to the awards. But the last few weeks I've been doing yoga every single morning. I didn't do it this morning now. That's been one of the things to help me stay sane. Yoga and meditation. I've been doing Reiki a lot more. The last year I'd say I've been on this like healing journey, as corny as that sounds as well. I do personal training now minimum twice a week as well. So I have that tonight. So pretty much most days I do yoga in the morning, PT in the evening, and that's it really. But I suppose that's more than a break I would have had previously.
Yeah.
Like, I suppose college in a weird way was a break away from work, but it's actually more intense.
It was more of a mental break.
Yeah. So I think it's become much more important to me now to start having more time. And that's why I've been planning to step back at some point. And it's not step back as in I wouldn't be in the company. I'd absolutely still be there every day. I just want to step back from some of the day-to-day duties of it and start just going back to what I love doing with the company, which is creating the ideas. It's the Gossies, it's Women of the Year, it's the podcast. That's really what I'm going to be focused on. And I am like, okay, I've been 10 years doing this now. I started when I was 24. I'm 34 now. And I'm starting to realize like stress really causes problems. So obviously I'm diabetic. It isn't good for the blood sugars. But even just in general, like I'm starting to be like, right, I need to take more care of myself.
You feel it in your body, don't you? You really start
and
to feel it.
And most entrepreneurs say it. They realize it late though.
Yeah.
That the most important person in your company is actually yourself. Because if you burn out or you're not well, the ship sink. I love the ship analogy, by the way. I'm like, if you're the captain of the ship and you're sick, who's going to steer the ship? Obviously, you create a team that's good enough to steer. Okay, that might be something. What if the ship starts sinking then? Like, there's all these things. I always look at it like a ship. And do you have dinghy boats on the side in case something doesn't work out? Like, that's how my brain works. I don't know if I'm ever going to find someone to run the company that has the same brain as me. That's why I think I'll always be involved. But yeah, I definitely think it's coming in on the horizon, maybe just slightly stepping back.
I think it's nice self-awareness though, isn't it, too, to realize that, like, yeah, look, I have to become.
Yeah.
Kind of the grand vision, the strategic plan.
The better ideas and stuff come from times of quiet, like meditating.
Yes. Yeah.
I've done wellness retreats this year, which I'd never done before. And some of my like biggest mentors and stuff that when I met them in my 20s, they were like, if I could go back in time, I would start meditating earlier. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, like I'll do it. Da, da, da. It's only the last 12 months I started to do it. And I'm like, damn it. Like, why didn't I listen to them?
It feels like a luxury. It's like, so I just sit
five
here
minutes.
Just think.
It's the best thing I've done though. For anyone listening who's in business and is stressed, it seems like it's impossible to take those 5 minutes, but it changes my day around. If I can just do a bit of yoga, do a bit of meditation, when things come flying at you, it's almost like the Matrix. I don't know how to explain it. You just start focusing on things differently and you're like, no, yes, okay,
slow
maybe.
Down your brain.
Whereas back in the day when I started, everything was a stress. I was breaking out in stress rashes. I'd be crying. I wouldn't know what I was doing. Now I'm just like, okay. If everyone said they were handing in the notice today and that I had to move out of my building that we rent the office out of, I'd be like, all right. So you get to that point after a lot of things.
You get experience as well, don't you? You get to kind of like pattern recognition.
Exactly.
I've seen this before.
It always works out in the end, and that's the pattern I love. Yeah. And the question is always, what's the worst thing that could happen? And when I looked at Goss at the beginning, the worst thing that could happen would that be it would fail and then I would just work somewhere else. That was the worst thing. So I was like, this definitely is worth the risk then. And people never answer that question.
You have to think about it. I think as a founder, you have to, or otherwise it's negligence. You're just like flying blind going, oh yeah, it's all going to be fine. And you need that. Oh, it's all going to be fine. But you also have to go, but if it isn't, what does that look like? And then if it looks kind of fine and then it looks great, what are the three different
And that happens more so when you have money in the bank and even investment, I find. It'll all be grand. The money's there. That isn't an option when you're bootstrapped. It's like, oh God, how am I going to make that extra grand today? And it's now 4 p.m.
Well, you think differently. Happens. It builds a mindset. Right, going to do a quick fire round.
Yes.
What book would you recommend every entrepreneur read?
I kind of have more than one. So in terms of pure business, I love Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. Have you ever read it?
Yes.
It's literally
good.
A really Bible. Good, yeah. And it's a real mixture. So it's basically entrepreneurs or really successful people like athletes talking about their day-to-day routines, what they do every day. And funnily enough, guess what's in all of those? Meditation. Yeah. But it's really good because if you're not particularly into one sort of entrepreneur, there's somebody for everyone. The other thing I really suggest just for people in general, let alone entrepreneurs, is Manifest the 7 Steps to Your Perfect Life by Roxy Nedusi. Okay. Sounds kind of random, but manifestation, positive thinking, all those sort of books, like The Secret, I got that when I was 17, changed my life. But the reason I like those books, not that I believe in magic or anything like that, it's just you need to stay positive when you're running a business. You need to believe that if you are positive, things will be positive. And if you don't have that mindset, you will just collapse. So positive thinking books or podcasts, if you're not too into the actual business jargon, they're really good at just making you a little bit calmer, hearing stories from people that their business nearly folded and like nearly lost everything. Like Mark Little has talked about that. I don't know if you've ever heard any of his stuff.
Yeah,
and he's such
great.
An amazing entrepreneur. But like I heard him say that like he had to let everybody go at one point. When you hear that and you hear the positive ending,
He's so humble. We've had him on. He's just so humble. Like you're like, you achieved so much across journalism and business. Now twice. Once, but twice. Phenomenal.
Do you know who's really good too? Is Richard Branson's books. Pretty much all of them. But the very first one, I can't remember the name.
Losing My Virginity for Richard Branson. It's iconic.
The reason I really like him is that he's very brutally honest. And he talks about how there was about 16 other Virgin businesses that absolutely plummeted to death. And he's like, but then you move. So I like him. He's very, because some books like Girl Boss, I really liked that book. But she doesn't really ever say how she became successful. There's no actual paragraph where she goes, and then you're asking me here, how did I get the growth? I'm telling you the answers. Yeah. She didn't really. But in Richard's books, I feel like he very much says, we got this deal and then we did this. We couldn't do that, but then we did this.
That's a really good insight, actually. Yeah. I love his books. That, to be honest, that was the one book, I think, for me that changed how I think about business. I think that was the one that I was like,
There's this misconception that like these really famous entrepreneurs are all perfect and we're just terrible at what we do and we're failures.
Or they're geniuses or there's some secret sauce. When in reality,
no,
there isn't.
Everyone has the exact same capability once you're able to try really hard at it. Like once you're in, obviously we're all in privileged positions here in Ireland. Like we're so lucky that we live in this country. We're not in a war zone. We're not facing some of the things that are going on. So if you have the life that me and you have, there's nothing stopping either of us from being the next Richard Branson. And Irish people hate thinking that.
Yes.
And they won't like me for saying that. But the biggest, most successful people in the world had more self-belief. They didn't care about what other people think. So I think positive thinking, if you're having a tough time, if you're struggling with business, business books are helpful. Like I read that one, like 10 Things They Don't Teach You at Harvard and stuff, but I wouldn't be massively into them because some of it just isn't really detailed enough for me. Yeah. I prefer the personal story. So if it was a starting out book, I'd say Losing My Virginity.
It's epic. Yeah. It's probably my favorite business book of all time.
Oh, good.
What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself since starting your business?
That I'm wildly resilient, I suppose, because there's just so much has gone on. Resilient and just that my drive doesn't ever seem to go. They're the two things I would say.
Nice. What valuable business do you think no one else is building?
This is a really tough question. I did see this and I was like, because there's honestly a million and one answers. Like from a very basic point of view, like we were talking about before we went on, I really think there needs to be a membership club launched in Dublin, like a Soho House vibe. Sometimes it's frustrating. You know, when you're on the outside and you're like, that would work so well and nobody is doing it. I would say that probably. I actually don't know other than that. I think there's been a huge amount of focus lately on beauty businesses and stuff like that. And I think that's blowing up and that's amazing. So there's been a real turn into that. So I feel like we're going to take another turn into something else probably soon enough. But that would be, if right now you were like, you can start a brand new business today, I'd probably be like a membership club. It sounds so poncy, but like, I feel like there's huge space for it.
A collab coming with Soho House and Goss. Yeah. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
So corny my answer for this one, I'd say, because I would definitely put it into Goss, a lot of it into Goss. I would go to the Maldives on holiday. I'd bring my family all away on holiday. I'd buy a mansion and then I'd just go back to work. to be honest, which
it's not corny at all. You're more honest than most people. Most people are like, I give it to charity.
And oh, well, obviously the charity side of it.
Oh, don't add that in at the
end,
Ali.
No, of course. So Women's Aid would be one of our biggest partners. But UNICEF, we actually donate the company and me quite a lot. So, you know, obviously, if it was right now, I'd be literally flying to Gaza myself. It's just all that situation so heartbreaking at the moment. But no, of course, a couple of mil would go there. But in terms of what I'd left, absolutely the business, nice holiday, new house, and then just go back to work.
Back yourself. I like that. What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
Yoga and meditation, 100%. And this, it's talked about a lot in Tools of Titans, but waking up in the morning and not going on your phone first. So what I do now is I wake up and I do yoga, but some people even just go to the kettle and make a cup of coffee, but not going immediately to your emails or your phones is a game changer.
That's,
I think,
huge. No, yeah. I charge my phone away now. I charge it, plug it in, charge it away. Just a simple thing of like,
it's out of reach. Like,
that simple habit of just putting your arm out.
I've started using the sleep function on my phone and the quiet mode on Instagram now.
Yes.
To just try stop myself from doing that. But I think probably the most important part of everyone's day is the morning time. And if you start it off that way, you will have a better day. Not being late 25 minutes trying to find parking. And I didn't do my yoga this morning. You see, there's a knock on domino effect.
There is. No, I believe you're right, because it sets a tone. Everything sets a tone for what will follow. So I think you're on.
Sunrise Yoga, by the way, if anyone's into trying out yoga, more with yoga, she's on The Apprentice now. You might have heard of her. She does sunrise yogas in Dunleary. And it sounds horrible because she gets up so early in the dark. It's the most beautiful, natural earth connect. And I'm not an outdoorsy person, but when you see the sunrise and you're outside, you're like, and the day just can't be bad.
There's something to it.
Yeah.
There is something to that. We go to the sauna and swim in Greystones on a Saturday morning. And obviously later in the year when it gets brighter, that sunrise is just...
Oh, it's pure
there's
magic.
There's power. Like there's something in it.
We need a reminder, I think, that the universe or whatever you believe in, higher power, whatever, that there's something there to keep you going. Because especially when you're running a business and you're dealing with a million fires being thrown at you every day, you have to have some bit of belief that like there's good.
You get caught up in the minor stuff as well.
Yeah.
I would give you 1 million euro. You can only invest in one person. Who would that be?
One person.
One person or one company, who would that be?
I'd probably invest in Amy Connolly. So she's doing Sculpted by Amy. Yes. That brand is blowing up. She has done a lot of that herself as well, up until like where she is now. Like she has done so much on her own. I know she's now trying to go global with it, seeing her store in Grafton Street. Like she's just amazing. She's a really good person as well. And she's just spot on. She knows the market. And I genuinely believe you invest in people, not in the business. Obviously, it needs to be a good idea.
Yeah.
But it is the people that drive the ship, going back to that analogy. And I think she's phenomenal. So right now, right here, that's who I'd give the money to.
Nice. What do you believe other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
Disagree with? About me?
In general.
Or in general.
What are your beliefs that other people find odd or disagree with?
Beliefs.
Yeah.
That anything is possible. That's definitely one that a lot of people don't get or agree with. Just that, like, if you try hard enough, you know, that really famous kind of picture illustration of the guy like digging and digging and he finally turns around and he's like 1 centimeter away from the goal.
I love that one.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, I love that.
And I have struggled my entire life since I read The Secret at 17. I've had fallouts with friends and everything because people are like, not everything is going to be good. Not everything is going to work out. That is kind of the Irish mentality. I don't know. I definitely don't experience it in like America. When I go to LA, everything is possible there.
Yeah.
So that's one massive thing. And that, like, you can just do everything yourself. I think there's a kind of growing trend now of like getting other people in to do a million things and kind of taking away your own creativity. I think we should all be doing more work ourselves, taking things on ourselves, learning new skills. Like, it's never too late to learn. But the number one thing is probably that anything is possible and that you have to really believe in it. Like, I'm really into manifestation now. Are you into it at all?
Visualization, manifestation. Yeah, absolutely. Like, so, when you see athletes do it and you see elite athletes and that's now part of their week, you kind of have to look at elite athletes and kind of go, what transfers across? Because companies have spent millions figuring this out.
Yeah. So it's now scientific. It's neurological at this point. Obviously, for years, it was like the secret being like, think positively. Now it's like neurological. People are saying that the same feeling and sensation you get when, let's say I'm holding this glass of water now, my brain is going to have the same results if I close my eyes and picture myself holding the glass of water. So it's genuinely scientific now. So it's very, very hard, but it's like that quote, you know, if you're lying in the gutters, just make sure you're looking up the stars.
Yeah,
I should know this exact quote. That was such a bad version of it. But just kind of always having the positive outlook, no matter how bad things are, which is very difficult when you've gone through personal issues or something. I do get that. But I feel like we have to have some belief in it. So that's something I feel
we
like.
You have to see where you're going, right? You can't just be flying blind all the time going, I'll get up today and I'll see what happens. I always say this, woolly goals give woolly results.
Yeah.
You say, I'm going to do this and this is going to happen. More than likely,
but you'll, I hate you'll people almost will it. Who would come back to me, definitely will it. But I hate people that come back and like, you need to be realistic. You have your head in the clouds, which would have been said to me a lot. But I'm like, realistic is your version of what you think
it's
is going
all
to
relative.
Happen.
Yes.
To me, it's realistic that I am going to create this media company. And it is going to be like the first 3 years, people were taking bets when Goss was going to close. First Christmas, second Christmas, third Christmas, it was all in WhatsApp groups and stuff like that. Because their reality was that there's no way Ali's going to make this work. Whereas in my reality was, I will do anything and everything to make this work. So that's why I feel like it's your own mindset. And I think the biggest, worst mistake people can make is relying on other people's versions of you and their versions of what you can do. Because like you said, with the athletes and stuff, some of the most successful people in the world, if you look back on interviews, they're like, I believed it. I willed it. You still have to do all the work. But if you don't believe it, it's just not going to happen.
Finally, what's your last piece of advice for every entrepreneur listening?
Oh my God. Definitely believe in yourself when all the doors are closing in your face, because some of the most successful people have had the doors been closed in their face. Just never giving up, I suppose. Asking yourself what's the worst outcome if you're having a panic or stress, and not caring what other people think about you. I think they're the key things to keep you going as an entrepreneur. Because like you said, it's a lonely journey. It doesn't even become just about running the business and paying the bills. It becomes about your own head.
Yeah.
And am I insane for doing this? Is this, why am I doing this? Like, I know entrepreneurs that have like kids and, you know, married, and they've sacrificed so much. And they've asked themselves, what am I doing this for? What's it about? And it's really hard self-reflection. So you have to be really kind to yourself, be good to yourself. And yeah, I just think don't give up. I know that's kind of contrary to some other people's advices where it's like, allow failure. Failure is fine. But I think
there's a misunderstanding of failure. Yeah. People think it's fine to fail. It is fine to fail, but it's not fine to give up. That's the difference
that's
I see.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fail daily, because if you're not failing daily, then you're not doing things. But failure has this like terminal feel to it.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, that's why I call it the entrepreneur experiment. Mm. All these micro experiments you do every single day leads to continual
and the
growth.
And the biggest failures lead to the best lessons as well. So I'm totally for them. But I think some people think once they fail, that's it. They need to walk away from the business. And they didn't get that deal, or they couldn't make that pay run, or I'm a failure, and they leave. And I'm like, no, like they're the things that should be building blocks. They're the things that should make you stronger. And like Mark was saying about Mark Little, like I know so many people that literally let everyone go, let their office go, and they started from scratch and they started again. You can always start again. You don't have to walk away and leave your dream if it's something you genuinely love. So yeah, not giving up, staying positive, having something in the day for yourself, like yoga or meditation. And I think that's mainly it, yeah.
Ali, where can people learn more about you and about Goss?
Goss.ie is the website. And then about myself, I suppose I've no LinkedIn. My Instagram is It's Ali Rose. But yeah, you'll see me on social media or on Ireland AM on a Monday chatting about showbiz. I'm always around somewhere.
Ali, that was a genuine pleasure. Thank you so much for coming
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.